The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Yeah.
And you touched there on the card deck.
Yeah.
And I've seen you do card readings. You've very generously gifted me some.
Yeah.
And what does that process look like for you? What has drawn you to those doing card readings as well?
When I was really little, my mum saw me with the deck of cards. And I can't remember, I think maybe my grandma had a book on tarot or something right. like that. And she said, oh, I think it was your great-grandma, she used to like to read the tea leaves. And I got, you know, looking in the bottom of the cup of tea leaves, and I kind of went, you know, I turned the cup. And went, oh, you know, I see a lion or something like that. You know, and it's like, oh, you can do that.
That's yeah.
It's just, if you allow... And I got myself out of the way a little bit.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. I think that there's a choice that people can make. And I believe that that's kind of be, that choice can be informed,
yeah.
an informed choice. And so through a process of looking at the, like the Druids used to look at a flight of birds, and that was an augury.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Romans used to look at the entrails of an animal, like that had recently been sacrificed, or yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's difficult to use the word sacrifice for me without getting excited about that story as well. So, but there's this piece about, there's this piece about what you want to look at. How do you want to look at? Does you want to go to a scrying pool, which is in like a Glastonbury, I went and visited this scrying pool that was, you know, maybe 3.5 meters wide, like a circle, very low, in a very gloomy space, lit by candles. It was so gentle, so holy. It was a holy world.
Yeah.
And pilgrims were encouraged to go there in contemplation of maybe a deceased loved one that they desperately wanted to hear from, or they wanted to pass a message the other way of like well wishes, and there would be a place to ceremonially wash the body first, and then to stand maybe in just a thin smock or something like that and see, and to use the eyes as a kind of receptivity to those pictures that may come from the gloom. And I kind of offer that gloom word as in there's a process of grief in that too, eh? So, sometime recently, a friend lost his father, and I talked to him about the process of grief, and I talked to him about Cinderella, the story of Cinderella, and how the ashes are significant in the cinders. So, you've got Cinderella, and The idea comes from the cinder biter, which is a practice that was held in the Nordic kind of nation, where if a person had lost a relative or a loved one, a deceased, they were offered the role of becoming the cinder biter. Maybe not even a role so much as it was just a natural thing that the person would lose themselves. And the village would see that there was someone who was so deep in grief that they really weren't engaging in the process of everyday life, and they would let them be, allowing.
Just sleep by the fire, and that's all you had to worry about.
Sleep by the fire, and so what they did was they would tend the ashes, and they believed that in the tending of the ashes, there was a process of augury was happening there. There was this piece about looking at the cards, about seeing a vision and finding it within the fire. And they said that they'd sometimes lose themselves so much that they would eat the ashes. So they're eating the agent of transformation. So the wood, the fire, the primal aspect of a longhouse, of a community living together, where they know that this Tane Mahuta, the wood of the has been burned. And it, in its burning, as it's giving its gift of fire and life to us, and it's transforming itself. The tree is the sacrifice. The wood tree has been venerated, celebrated, and what's left is the agent of, or the resultingness.
Mm.
And the resultingness would possibly be eaten by the cinder biter, who later on becomes Cinderella.
Mm.
So now we see Cinderella at a hearth place, and she's having to do the necessary grief work, and she's sweeping it up, right?
The other good thing about this eating cinders and eating charcoal is it's a purative thing.
Right, so it absorbs toxins out of our bodies.
Yeah.
And maybe we're pulled to that in our grief. And I tried to share this, and I hope it landed well for my brother, that I sort of confirmed his rightness in not wanting to engage in the experience of being told, oh, it's going to be okay, he's in a better place now. Because it's such a sacred thing that the person's still having dialogue.
Yeah.
And here's the curiosity in that, is it okay for somebody then to step forward and say, I feel like I need some support from my community, or I feel like I need some refocusing, and I'm going to ask the cards, or I'm going to ask the scrying pool, or I'm going to ask the shimmering colors of green on a leaf as it twists, and I'll see a picture in it. Mm. Maybe I'll see a green man who'll emerge and whisper something to me from my ancestors, and that's a vision.
Mm.
So the cards for me became that place of like, oh, this is a great place to creatively dance with stories, and because a lot of the card work that I do is related to animals, so I don't attempt in any way to read the future.
Yeah.
What I'm offering is the energies of an animal. So if I was to offer you some cards, you'd maybe take the cat, and I'd tell you a story about cats. And obviously, while I'm telling you the story about cats, cats slinking into your heart space, or your, and then cat can come and do the whispering. I don't need to do that. I'm not engaged in my agenda to get you to think of things from my perspective. It's just, it's an old model that has been used in the past with sort of practitioners of various forms of readings can be doing this for money. We only have to go back as far as like Greece, and you're talking about the one who sat on a stool, and she was in Delphi, and she was the oracle, a brass stool, right? And sitting on that stool, there was a crack underneath the stool, right? And the crack, they said that it was like the serpent.
Mm.
And the essence of the serpent was coming through the ground. Well, it was on a broken fault line, and it was sulfuric kind of emanations, gases that were coming up and putting her into a trance. That went on for generations. And there was a priesthood that was related to that. And like, I could make that masculine or feminine, it doesn't suit an agenda either way. But what happened is that that became charged, it became a pay-per-view experience.
Right, yes.
So once that happens, there's an agenda to get the person to come back in 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding!
And here we have modern therapy.
Right. So a lot of this conversation is based in freedom, brother.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for this. This energy between us that is like, there isn't a transaction happening.
No.
You know? This is a piece that there is a transaction, but the word transaction is a bit sullied.
Yeah.
Because it has a connotation of the economic.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, maybe the transaction, maybe the third voice in this is a box of birds.
Yes.
Who are singing in the background, and that's wealth.
Yeah, totally.
Right, abundance.
I have that painting as you went into our house, you just described. I found it in Australia, and it drew to...
The brush chair?
Yeah, yeah. of the woman sitting on the brass chair with the crack. Right. And it led me on a journey to want to understand what that was.
I have a friend who's related to that line.
Oh, right.
And when I showed him that, I bought a postcard, yeah, maybe of the same image.
Yeah.
Truly amazing. He's in Glastonbury, called Kieran Sibley. And he said, he's like, what are you doing bringing this picture here? And I said, I don't know, it's a beautiful postcard, you know? Have you seen it? It's like, I'm going to Delphi. Because I went off to go, mm-hmm, and I went and, mm-hmm, stood there, you know? And sometimes, here's the other piece of the storyteller. If you go there to the location, then you're at a node.
Yes.
And your body memory holds the space. So when the richness of the storying emerges, we're drawing from some space that's eternal, that's, mm-hmm, the planet, that's our ecosystem, that is True Source.
Mm.
True Source is feeding that piece about Delphi because I went there. It's okay, there's another bit of story that's related to Delphi. I was still a single guy, lone traveler. Last time I went lone traveling was like going to Athens, you know, and I went because I love Greece and mythology. Something like, mm, something poetic. Like I think one or two of my poetry books just channel straight out of Greek, the Greek kind of energy that's available because they worship the muse.
Mm.
And like, if we're going to get into that, then we'll have to make another podcast about this idea of Pleiadian kind of energy and how the muses with this breath on a cauldron, right? Anyway, so there's the preamble, and it's just me, and I'm on my Jack Jones, and I'm wandering around. I get to Delphi, I'm like, wow, chips and calamari on a street corner is gorgeous. I'm fiercely writing poetry because I've got this burning up because I want to have a voice, I want to say something. And then I get to this, I go to see the amphitheater there. And I wandered up to this amphitheater. The whole place was empty. Like, this civilization that's still in the landscape there. And it was harmonious.
Mm.
The shape followed the contours of the land, you know. And then I imagined how, I don't know if it was Apollo who rode two dolphins, one on each foot, you know, dolphin,
yeah,
right? And how the dolphins came up the river and he named the place as he came up the river and said, this is where we will begin. This is the new place, our new Eden. You know, we begin a new chapter of yeah. And I'm like, wow, it's amazing. So I clambered and I think I was smoking a cigarette, sitting there, you know, on my Jack Jones. And I was trying to write some lyrics or something like that. And I heard the most amazing sound. And I looked down, and there was a beautiful woman down there, Wahine. And she was singing. And she went into full, absolute full opera.
Wow.
Like nothing. You could pay hundreds of bucks to go to, I don't know, the Barbican or like the Met for like the greatest, you know, soprano. I'm pretty uncultured in that.
Mm-hmm.
But when her heart opened and her friend was stood as far away from her as I am to you right now, and she just kind of gave her a nudge and went, go on.
Wow.
And she did. And she filled that whole space and the trees bowed to her.
Mm.
And the wind rippled around her and created like clouds and eddies and spaces that danced. And she was calling in, evoking. She was a magical experience. I'm still there, profoundly bewildered, dumbstruck, with my mouth sort of half open, like, I don't know. I don't know what she's singing. I don't know what this signifies.
Mm.
And all I can say is, I picked myself up when she kind of given us like this pretty extensive rendition of a piece, and I was kind of getting back to just being in the world, right? And her and a friend were walking up the other side of the steps, and I just looked at her and I caught her eye for a moment and I said, thank you. And she just dropped her gaze and smiled, but it landed.
Mm.
There'd been a moment of intimacy And she was the oracle.
Mm-hmm.
She was the thing that I couldn't understand but will live with me and through me as some form of inspiration. And I felt that that was, yeah, a good line to just throw in there.
It's put a tear to my eye. Just the raw beauty of that is just stunning.
Yeah.
It's really stunning.
Yeah. I'm curious about how we can, as people, like as members of our community, without fearing a tall poppiness, how can we inspire a whole community? I'd like to say young people, because they're sort of so worthy to inspire, but one another without the continual itchy thing on the back saying, oh, don't put your head up too far. People don't like that. You could be seen as being aloof or too grand. And
yes, one of the things about New Zealand that's frustrated me the most is that tall poppy thing. I think we really need to start challenging the culture of dismissing that and allowing people to grow and stand up and and it's sing
etu,
to it.
You know, and it just really is etu. It's like standing and how it offers something of our heart. Of our sharing and of our giving. So,
and the use of the word pretentious as well. When people are just doing their thing, to bandy that word pretentious, it's so dismissive and destructive. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's one of the words I'd love to see banned.
Let's go and burn some words in the garden.
Yeah. Not that we should be banning any words. You're in Golden Bay. You've been around the world a lot.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it.
Yeah.
What brought you? What energy dragged you or invited you or whatever the word is for being here?
Yeah. Not difficult. There's a piece of Panamu that I invited into my relating, and it came from possibly the Takaka River, maybe a bit further up in the Cobb or something, and it was in 2006 or 7 or something like that, and a chap called Dave Mahal, he was organising the Mardi Gras, or the Mardi Gras, as it was kind of fondly referred to, on the village green, and I was just a backpacker with a little camper van, and I did a clown show for him, and it was really nice because Dave was so cool. He just offered me like, hey, no fuss, here's $100, you just blow your balloons, and he just treated me like you should be treated, you know, as an artist. Because I find that really strange in our culture, that like an artist has to kind of like, there's a suggestion of like, well, poverty is nobility. It's not. Poverty is a pain in the ass. And so I was really gratefully received, and I was celebrated, and I played, and I had fun in the community. And in it, there's a seed of myself that's been here since 2007. And then I went away. And I took this piece of Panama with me, but not before I'd driven out to the spit. And as I drove just towards Collingwood, I can still remember looking around and thinking, I think this is possibly the most beautiful landscape that I've ever seen, that I've ever been in a relationship to. And so when there was a time for parenting and children, and when I kind of found that there was a little bit more to life with love and with my wife, it was something very, very wholesome about like this place, this space, this time. And it's a real mystery. It's a real, I mean, and there's some things that are so intimate about being chosen by the land. And there's something that's scarily woo-woo about it. This is like, you know, like, I'll just be brief about it. Like, our child was a little Arwen was conceived when we didn't live here, but we were here, and I don't mean that in a woo-woo. I mean, we were physically here, and we visited for a weekend, and then we were gone, and we didn't even realize that 9 months later, a house would be sold, another journey would have happened, a 1,000-mile walk with my wife and me across, 1,000 kilometers to walk across Australia would have happened, and we got married, and then, oh, we're going to look for a place to live, and oh, we could go to Mahua, we could go to the South Island. We said the South Island, and we had a little look around, and we got signals and symbols and signs and a pathway, and we said okay, and before we know it, we settled down in the space that our daughter was conceived the 9 months prior to that, and she just arrived with her Tūronga Waiwai. So I get it, and I don't. It's a complete mystery to me that there's like my river and my mountain piece, which is just beautiful poetry, but it's so practical. It's such an earthy practice, a grounded practice, a good practice to name those things. And I started to realize if I can do that to the places that my whenua is in North Wales, which incidentally was in an incinerator. That's what happened to the whenua. Like, for a long time in the 70s, they just get dragged out the back of the hospital and stuck in a big burner, right?
So yeah.
I struggled with that for a bit, and then kind of made peace with it, that we could be so wasteful. And I say we, but I'm only looking from a lens of somebody else who's grown through that culture of seeing the kind of the wastefulness. And it's kind of a belief that we kind of almost some kind of immortal thing, and just immortal's different from walking with some humility, but like being in a dance with infinity. Yummy. And so her mountain and her river, Arwen's mountain and her river, are here. And I see her with her ankles in the stream, and she's just, it's home.
Yeah.
And there's this other piece as well that I just add to the whole soup of it. Is the exact place where she was conceived is a place of coastal erosion, and it's no longer there. So her land, her fan of the earth underneath this place that held us for that moment is being drawn, and the poet in me loves it.
Yeah.
That there's this transient nature to how we are on the world, how we are. And it's a blessing almost that I offer to my children, is that if they can see that thing, they know they belong here. Mm-hmm. They don't have to claim an exact spot. And there's a piece where, when I first arrived in Aotearoa, I was asked a lot, like, where are you from? You know, like in the classic Fat Boy Slim way, when he was in Brighton, he'd think he wrote a whole piece of music that was called You're Not From Here, Are You?
Yeah.
Which is what you get in Fresh Choice when you just made a cheeky joke with somebody, and she looks and says, you're not from here, are you? and there's a suggestion to that about where do you belong? In the dialogue of Kiwis with other people who have arrived. So then when we have a Maori conversation and a Pākehā conversation for new immigrants. Even the word immigrants is pretty hostile.
Isn't it?
So they got this like piece about, I started to cheekily return the offer, where are you from? I would say,
me.
I would point directly at my chest, and or point down at the ground and say, I'm earthling. Let's leave it at that. Can we leave it at that? Because I don't need to be too specific when I'm thinking about a galactic project. That this is a space and time traveling vehicle, that you, I, and everybody on it, we're on it. And we're traveling through space and time at vast giddying speeds that I have really complicated to comprehend for the human consciousness, And in it, we're dazzled by our relationship with the stars and the journey through that. And we're navigating our walker, our planetary walker, through a vast ocean. And there's a mythology about that. And it was a great turtle. Yeah. And it was on the back of four elephants. You got this one, right? You remember, right? And so, you know, there's cascades of waterfalls that come down this, and she's swimming through space. This beautiful turtle. It's through the nebula, through exploding eons, through dimensions, and through vast powers that I can't even comprehend within myself, but I can be in relationship to it if I change my frame of reference to, X marks the place where I've emerged from. Oh, I am all things. I'm related to all things. And all things are related.
It's certainly a better answer than I'm from Merseyside.
I'm from Liverpool.
Many artists sort of find themselves living at the margins of society, like the liminal spaces,
on the edge of the table.
And that's come up quite a lot
for
us over this last couple of days, is that sort of being at the edges of space, the edges of communities, and it's where we've discussed, like, that's where the beekeepers and the magic makers and all these people live. What does that mean to you?
There's a tradition in Britain of the fields, in between the fields of farmers' fields, they always left about 3 meters, 4 meters, 5 meters of a strip in between every field. So you crossed, you kind of had a space in between the space that was left to be forest, because there was a recognition that that space was the space that maybe fed the energy and the biodynamics of the place. We've got all these great terms for it now, but back then it was quite simple. It was just that felt right. Well, let's leave a big space, and we'll leave some of the oak trees in the center of the field. You go through Anglesey and you go through some of, like, this down in the southern kind of parts of Britain, and there was a lot of trees left. I mean, you go out to East Takaka today and you'll see the totara trees, that some old styles of agriculture, and they recognize that these are all ancestors, they're ancient. So let's leave them there because they're offering some kind of wisdom into the soil. Yeah, you know, so they're informing, and they're informing so much. So the reason I go to that piece is this: these edges, these borderlands is where our human experience is informed. And I have an experience in this life that I was taken to the place in between, in between fields, and I was put into the root, the crux of a root of an oak tree, and three space holders sang the tree and myself into a place that sang me into something sacred. And so that makes today a worthy relationship. A useful relationship, a continuing relationship with the edges. And the thing that I found here in this space as I'm looking out there into the Manuka and the Kanuka is, when I go down there, put my blanket out there, and I go and lie down there, I feel that I can be the closest to my emotional thing. I see my children growing up on the edges of things. And I'm curious how sometimes it feels safer to be on the edge of an experience when we're looking into a culture. Because some of the things that are happening in the center of the culture are so complicated and dangerous.
Totally.
You know.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. and you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.